The Money Show.
Small business.
To Pablo Fatides now, and I am so glad that you are not in the aeronautical industry, Pablo, because you're proposing to us that we should be building while we fly, which is wonderful if you've got both feet firmly planted on the ground and fly is a euphemism for growing your business really quickly. Terrible if you're building an aeroplane while you're trying to fly. So I'm glad you're not in that industry. Hello.
But it's part of the reality, Bruce. It's such a great analogy because, you know, often when all of us start a business, you start always under-resourced and under-capitalized, and it's full of drama, and you go through all these trials and tribulations only to find yourself getting a nice steady revenue coming in. And then you suddenly realize that now you have taken off, you're up in the air, you want to grow into new markets or bring new products on board or employ people. And the aeroplane you have, which is a really good analogy for the business model that you have built, needs to be rebuilt and deepened and strengthened and made stronger to carry the weight of new customers and new products and new employees. But you can't land because you have customers knocking on your door day to day, month to month, saying, serve me, and I'll pay you. So there is no option other than to learn how to build while you fly. Those engines need to be changed mid-air. And just to be clear, you don't switch them all off and change all four of them at once. You change them one by one while the others are still operating.
In practical terms, I mean, I suppose Microsoft is a really good one at that. It's certainly in the early days of Microsoft, now with Microsoft 365, which is subscription-based, I'm guessing they're always updating and always fixing any defects. But in the early days of Microsoft, it was notorious for sort of being released in imperfect form, and then you'd get an update sort of later. And they were essentially building while they were flying, weren't they? That's one example. Can you think of others?
That's a great example. And in fact, most of these organizations have. You can do it in that manner if you are fully funded and resourced. So if you're fully funded and resourced, the build while you fly concept happens almost in tandem with the day-to-day flying and operations of the business. But if it's just you and you are underfunded and you have stretched yourself and your resources and your team to the nth degree, this is where you operate 9 to 5. 9 to 5, you run the business, you keep the business going. And then at 5 to 9 and 5 to 9 p.m., it's all about getting your team together and saying, look, these are the structural changes we need to make before we open up for business at 8 a.m. or 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. And if you do that smartly and incrementally, and you do it with a motivated team, Bruce, it becomes a real possibility because the cost of not getting it right is enormous.
It's all well and good while you are growing, while you're starting up, and everybody buys into the dream. But every business gets to a point where people aren't seeing the progress that they believe they would see. They're not getting the rewards they hoped they would get. You start getting the water cooler bickering, and things start to fall apart. To keep a team motivated to be building while you fly and to be occasionally having to defend the company because something's gone horribly wrong. I was in a session the other day where something for a big customer of a big organization had gone horribly wrong. And the person on stage was asked, you know, so what must we do to keep you as a client? And the client said, well, avoid what happened last time and then we'll stay. If that happens one more time, we're out the door. And so it's very hard, I think, to be doing this in practical terms.
It is very hard. It is very hard. And this is why it often leads to people getting into a steady state. So let's say they grow their business, they hit the 10, 20, 30, 40 million a year, whatever the revenue number may be. It might be more, it might be smaller. But you're looking at what you've done and you're looking at where you're at and you're saying, you know what, this is working as it is. I'm not going to put pressure on the business because any growth initiative by definition puts pressure on the business. It means that you need a stronger chassis in the business to be able to support that growth. It's taken me a long time. It's been a hard road to build the current chassis I have, and it's carrying my growth It's carrying my revenues month to month. It's carrying my team month to month, and it's giving me a sense of reprieve. And that is a fateful place to be, Bruce, because most people by far reach that. And it's fateful because it essentially means you're likely to be the business. In other words, without you there holding things together, because you haven't built the appropriate chassis to your plane, and because you haven't made the effort to make the changes necessary to support further growth, you simply hold it together as the captain of the plane, dealing with daily, weekly operational issues. And here's some of the signs of this. It's a life of firefighting every time you try and grow. Or when you do try and grow, you start to lose customers. Or when you do try and grow, your team members start to get agitated and frustrated and complain, and you lose one or two good people, or you might lose a good supplier. But if you're facing stagnant growth, you have this horrible thing called inflation that eats you from the inside, from the outside. It's invisible, but it's constantly eating away at the value of your company. And it creates this vicious cycle of stagnation and drain, which has a big impact on your self-confidence as well.
It most certainly does. So, how do you keep teams motivated through the cycles of uncertainty around this? Because teams are made up of people who, invariably, if you've hired well, these are going to be people with other options. These are going to be people that are sought after. These are people whose skills and talents are transferable. And it is up to you, as the leader of this gang, to make sure that they stay on top of things. And you, in this position, you yourself have to be filled with self-belief and with conviction and with the and be able to communicate that in a way that doesn't, you don't sound like you're a lunatic who has no perspective on the real issues that the company is facing.
Well, you need to face up to the fact that you can't do everything on your own. And if you have that kind of team around you, I think it's really important that you co-create the vision of what you want that company to be. If they're an adept group of people, if they're competent, capable people, if they are valuable to your organization, then you need to add some meaning to just simply the function of everyday work. And the best way to do that is to talk about what the future could look like, to talk about what impact the business itself through the products and services you offer can have on that future, for whether it be clients that you are targeting or an environment that you're working in, the markets that you're working in. But you need to create bigger meaning than just the function of work. That's the first thing. Then the second thing, Bruce, is, and it's really hard sometimes to bear. As the business owner, you often think about your business for extended periods of time. You might take a week's holiday or 2 weeks' holiday, but in the back of your mind, the business is ticking over. On the weekend, you're thinking about the business. It might not be front of mind, but it's certainly in the back of your mind. And very often, your team think about work when they arrive there and then stop when, once the day ends and they leave. So it needs to be supported through asking many questions and hearing many voices from your team in order for those individuals to better have themselves heard and to see themselves in the future of that business. That sense of creating meaning beyond just a functional work is really important. And you'll be surprised how even people perhaps lower down in the ranks of your business have insights that they would love to share but aren't sure or clear how to. But the ability to have those conversations is vital.
Talk to me about how founders stay energized, how they stay in a position where they are able to motivate others. Because I think being the founder is ultimately a very lonely place. It's a bit like being CEO. People, it's terribly romantic and terribly sexy, but at the same time, if the buck is stopping with you and things aren't going according to plan, they're not working out the way that you thought they would, and they're not working out in the way that you promised the people you've hired to come along with you on this journey told you they would work out, and you told them they would work out. And suddenly you've got to be motivating yourself in as much as you've got to be motivating them. And I can imagine that that gets fairly difficult from time to time.
Yeah, I think it does get difficult. And, I see it consistently. And in fact, just this week, the idea of why I need to grow emerged because of, do you remember some months back we did a show called The Six Ds, where either because of death or disablement or disease or disillusionment or debt, what were the others? There were a couple of other Ds in that. It's these kind of life-changing events that kind of shake you and make you start looking at what you're doing differently, because it's so easy to get into a kind of steady state where almost you do what you do without realizing why you do it or how you do it. And as the business matures, if you allow your team to get into that position and you allow that to become the culture of the business, it is a very, very hard thing to shift. On the other hand, if you set a big vision for the business, if in that vision your team has had a share to contribute their voice, and that vision then becomes bigger, far bigger than you yourself can achieve or they themselves can achieve, and then on the back of that, say, right, now let's map out how we're going to get there. And make sure that when you go there, Bruce, you take your team with, you get them to do the heavy lifting alongside you, as opposed to building an environment where you say, I'm leading this, I will take up my machete, I will clear a path in this uncontested terrain, and then I will hand something over to you. The notion of building together, as opposed to me building and then instructing you to operate, is such an old way of thinking about business, and it doesn't motivate a team to come with you.
It comes down to hiring and hiring properly right from the start. Hendrik du Toit talks about this in episode 3 of the Genius Podcast series, and he talks about the very deliberate hiring strategies that they employ and the amount of effort they go to ensure that they get the people they know are most likely to work in their environment. And then those people go through an incredibly rigorous selection process, at the end of which they may say to the person, look, you're lovely, you're great, but you're just not right for us. And they keep looking and they keep going, and they can wait ages to find the right people. And the moment they do find the right people, they then pursue them to the ends of the earth to draw them into the business because they know that they're going to add value. That concept of hiring and hiring well so that you're not making unforced errors, if you like, is pivotal in this process.
It is. And I don't think we hire smartly. I've for a long time been arguing, and I really do believe that this is the only way to do it, unless you have this magical gift of being able to meet someone once, twice, three, four, five times even, and fully interpret their skills and capability and arguably support how they see themselves against their CVs in relation to the job itself. I think it's always important to hire in an action interview process. And that is the process of saying, I know what the job is that I need done. I know how I have designed this job through the activities that make up the job. Let me quickly assess through a very practical discussion whether these are activities you're familiar with and whether you have an aptitude and capability to deliver them. Because if I know you can do the job, then I'm going to spend the next three, four interviews actually trying to understand and interpret your values. And hiring on the back of values rather than hiring on the back of a fantastic CV, getting a rock star into the business that might well deliver some immediate benefits, but could be toxic to the overall team feeling that you are attempting to build in the business, is a big mistake. Values hiring is essential, but most of us often get it wrong because we hire for the function first, not the values first.
Pivotal lesson. Thank you, Pavlo Fetidis, with the pivotal lesson.